Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, the three-man team, back together. How's it going, Chris?
I'm doing good, Scott. I'm glad we're finally getting this back together. Matt, how are you doing?
Yeah, good to be back. It's been a minute.
Yep. I mean, you've been gone. I mean, Scott and I talked last week, but I mean, you've been out for like a month. Anything you want to get off your chest while we're going to break out this the podcast?
No, I mean, this season is simultaneously going much better than expected while also being incredibly frustrating. So that's a fun combination of things. I don't think anybody had him at, 22-4 at this point?
Yes.
Yeah. So they're overachieving, but it's not always a happy, fun time watch, I guess would be the way to put that.
Yeah, they're kind of the team that started to kind of come together really nicely over the last couple of months. I mean, one of our biggest concerns going into the season was, you know, you knew we were going to get a Jerron Cumberland, but giant question marks around him. Like, what was the rest of the guard, you know, small forward combo going to do? I mean, what were they going to get out of Jennifer and Kane Broome? And, you know, we've answered a lot of those questions over the course of the season. It seems like, you know, Justin Jennifer's really coming to his own as a senior, as a spot-up three-point shooter. He's, I think the best on the team, if not the best in the conference. Keith Williams has come into his own as another threat on the outside, at least, you know, driving in towards the basket. Brooks and Scott are pretty capable inside, holding their own. I mean, they did so last night against Taco Fall, holding him to only 7 points and 4 boards. You know, there's a lot of weaknesses on this team. The three-point defense is one of them. Getting consistent offense from anyone not named Cumberland, I mean, it's been kind of pulling teeth at times, but, I mean, it is a rebuilding year. So, yeah, I'm happy with 22-4.
Yeah, and 22-4 is like we said, it is much more than anybody expected, especially after that first game when, you know, no one was happy with that result, and
right,
it just got everything off on the wrong foot. But, you know, there's still that, as well as they're playing, there is still that nagging feeling, you know, for me at least, that, I mean, this team reminds me so much of Sean Kilpatrick's senior year team, where the record was good, the ranking was okay, the performance in conference was good, but you just had that feeling, that suspicion that it's all a little bit of a house of cards. And I think this group is better than that group, but that, like I keep circling back to that year because this group reminds me of that in so much, and not just because they are so reliant on Jerron Cumberland to do everything for them, but the style of play is the same. They're like all that heavy ISO stuff. Like there's no ball movement at this point, and the rotation has been cut down. It's been cut down to 8, and honestly, it should be cut down to like 7. Like they don't need to be playing three bigs, you know. So Semi probably shouldn't see minutes the rest of the year. I just don't see what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of with you on that one. Watching the last couple of games, like I really don't, like maybe Wichita and like Central Florida to an extent are just different, but seeing those teams go, like whatever their best players are, especially in Wichita's case where they have like two good players and the rest are kind of like filler. I kind of wish like Mick would lean more that way and not just try to like throw like two bigs on the court at every time. It's like so Semi has been like nice in spots, but then like in games like last night, like he doesn't really add a ton besides fouling. Like, and like even like a, some of the guard rotation, I don't really understand. Like, I really don't know why Logan Johnson doesn't get more minutes at, like, maybe, like, Sosa or, like, Frederick's expense. But that's kind of, like, a picking nit, because like, I'm really interested to see what Logan Johnson could actually do on this team. But he doesn't really play defense that well, so, like, who's to say?
Yeah, and I mean, I can totally see it from both perspectives. Like, the offensive potential of this team is limited based on playing, you know, two forwards at the same time. I think we all are kind of in agreement that we'd like to see them open up a little more, play four guards, you know, rotate between Scott and Brooks down low, as opposed to, you know, having both on the court at the same time and then rotating in Sosa-me. I mean, at the same time, they're still, you know, 40th in adjusted offense, which is, you know, better than last year. And they're still getting good, solid production out of the guard position. So, I mean, I can kind of see it both ways, but, like, if we're basically, like, I don't really see a point in the future where Mick is going to all of a sudden say, hey, my offensive philosophy, or my per-game philosophy is we're going to have four guards slash, you know, stretch forwards on the floor, and then one anchor underneath, and that's my team. That is the makeup of my team. I don't see him kind of throwing his current, you know, game plans and long-term strategy of the program out the window to go that route. And in that case, I'm kind of like, you know, if this is the world we're living in, I'm happy with the result so far.
See, I don't even think it's that much about offense. I think your offense is, like, obviously it's fine with those guys. I think what you're getting really killed at is defense. Because, like, they just take both.
Sorry, Scott. I mean both ways. I only kind of gave offense as an example. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, like, defensively, like, most good teams that run, like, solid offense have been taking both the bigs up and putting them in pick and rolls. And UC hasn't defended a pick and roll, like, pretty much all season long. Even, like, last night, they got toasted by it pretty hard with like, pretty much every three that UCF got in the second half. And especially when Trevor Moore got buried alive on that alley-oop dunk where, like, he fouled. Like, that's, like, the biggest problem to me, because, like, those guys are solid defenders, but if you put them in space, they cannot recover to the basket. Or, like, the guards, frick, for whatever reason, can't recover onto three-point shooters. Like, maybe not everybody will shoot like Dawkins did in the second half, where it seemed like he just didn't miss. But then, on the flip side, people aren't going to shoot like Wichita State did in that first half of that game, where, like, they couldn't hit anything. Even the second half. Like, no team is going to just throw a brick after brick after brick like that consistently against them. And, like, to what Matt said earlier, I think playing more guards, like, would help move the ball a little bit more. Like, you see last night, only 13 assists to 14 turnovers. Against Wichita State, they only had 14 assists. They did have only 20 made shots in that game. But, like, so much of it's just on Cumberland to do everything. And he's had been the leading assist man the last two games. So I would like to see it, like, a little more, just because I think that helps you overall, not just on one side.
Yeah, and the defense is the biggest problem for this team. And the, you know, there's that one major thing that's wrong with the defense. There's a bunch of little things, but there is one tactical error that is continually being made. And that is, this whole defense is predicated on being able to switch one through five. And that worked fine when you had Kyle and you had Gary and you had Jacob Evans. You know, like, that worked. When you had, you know, five dudes who were all basically the same size, a hyper-aggressive switching defense like that can do wonders, and it did. But they're still running that same defense, and Nasir Brooks is nowhere near as mobile as Gary Clark, let alone Kyle Washington. You know, like, he is spending way too much time above the break, you know, above the three-point line, trying to trap ball handlers. That dude should never – he should plant his feet at the free throw line and never go beyond that. But because of the scheme that they run, he is being asked to do things that he is physically not capable of doing. And anytime he ventures beyond that free throw line area, you can see the alarm bells going off in everybody else's head, and everybody else gets frantic and starts, you know, super switching. And smart teams are going to put him into the action every single time, because – you are going to get – that's the only way to get good offense against this group, is to put him in the action, because that causes a ripple effect that makes everything late. It makes the closeouts late on the three-point line. It makes running people off the three-point line impossible, you know, very difficult, if not impossible, because, you know, you got everybody in scramble mode. And, like, I think just dialing back that aggressiveness a couple degrees, you know, you don't have to go to 100 every time. Like, keep it at 60. Make sure that he doesn't leave the paint, because, you know, Brooks doesn't know this, and I don't think Mick knows it, but he's worthless as a defender outside of that restricted area. Like, he is bad. But they're still running the scheme to ask him to do things that he's not capable of. And to that end, when UC was in serious trouble, when the shit was up against the fan, right, they went to their best lineup. You know, they went with Broom, Jennifer, Keith Williams, Jaron, and Trey Scott. I think that is the best five that this team can have, because you have four ball handlers on offense. You have, you know, you have a two kind of smallish guards, which is not ideal, but if they're at the front of that zone, that's not as much of a problem. And you got 2 6-5 guys that you can play at the base of that zone. You're going to get good rebounding. You're going to get better defense. Like, that is, and you have four ball handlers on offense. When's the last time a UC team had more than two on the floor at once? 2012. When they had to go for a round one because punchy stuff. You know, he stumbled into that, and they played the best 5 minutes that they played all season long with that group. And down the stretch, it, you know, it didn't show up again. But I think that is the best five, and they need to work to get that group on the floor together more often.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, we're all kind of preaching to the choir here that UC would be better off on both ends of the court, you know, going small, just because, you know, small for UC is, you know, 6'7", 6'8", lanky, oh, not 6'7", like 6'6", 6'7", lanky kind of guard, stretch forward combo guys at the 3 and 4, which, you know, you technically lose a little bit in height, but, I mean, you don't really give up that much in terms of, like, arm length and the ability to create deflections and rebounds and all that kind of stuff. Guys, I just don't see a world in which Mick Cronin throws out the 3-2 strategy and goes 4-1. It's just not going to happen. So, like, if we're living within this universe that we can't bust through, you know, I don't know if I have a ton of complaints about the makeup of this or how they're running the team. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it does make sense, because, like, really, like, those guys are your best seven players, like, throwing down to, like, his full rotation. And, like, even Broom, like Broom and, like, the starting lineup are, I think, obviously your six best players. And whatever you get from, like, Trevor Moore and, like, Sosa May and Fredericks and, like, Logan Johnson is fine. But, like, when it did come down to it yesterday, they did, like, sub in kind of frequently and, like, throw in a different kind of look at Central Florida. Like, some of that was just because of what Central Florida was throwing out to try to come back. But I just think that group played a lot better down the stretch. And then, like, of course, like, to that point, it's like Trey Scott and Justin Jennifer hit gigantic three-pointers. Like, one of the most unlikely people to hit a three was Trey Scott, just, like, out of nowhere. With a gigantic shot, and then Justin Jennifer, like, ices the game with a wide open three, like a defensive breakdown by UCF, which you don't really see often from them.
No, yeah. And that, like, the play of Trey Scott yesterday was such an outlier. Like, he doesn't shoot threes, period. I don't think he's averaging an attempt in a game, like an attempt a game. But he shot three of them yesterday, and I think he made all three, right?
He shot two, and he made one.
Well, that one seemed very important.
Yeah, but he's only shot like 22 all season. So to your point stands.
Yeah, I mean, like, and this team has gotten better as Trey Scott has been de-emphasized.
Yep.
Because at the beginning of the year, they were trying to make him into something he's not. Like, they're trying to make him into this wing scorer guy who's going to beat people off the bounce. Like, that's just That's as soon as that stopped happening, the offense got really, really good. Because it's just not his game. He needs to be in that more of a support role. He's not going to be able to make the kind of plays that they were asking him to make earlier in the year.
Yeah, and I think part of that is they Mick's given Jaron the loose leash to basically dictate the offense as he sees fit. And he has such great court vision. He's not looking at Trey Scott every single time he comes down the court. He's looking on the outside to Keith Williams and Justin Jennifer, and that's why we've seen them blossom this season in the last couple of months. I mean, that's been a huge move in terms of getting the offense going the last few months.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Keith Williams is like really turned into like a really, really solid player. Like last night, like doesn't really do many things from two, but then hits a couple of threes, which seemed like it kind of forced him into like taking a bad three, like kind of late in the game when things were still tight. Like his maturation to like the score where, like if Cumberland's like bottled up, you still have to respect Keith Williams. And Keith Williams is probably their best interior scorer too, which just like makes things even more interesting.
It's like, bro, there's no if about it. Like he is the best finisher around the rim this team has. It's not even close.
And he's like the one guy on the team who can consistently get to the foul line, like outside of Cumberland, which is like another thing that this team like really needed. And like last night, it was probably the difference in the game is like, outside of like UCF turning the ball over 600 times in the first half, was UC like 11 and 12 at the line, and Central Florida only attempts 7 free throws total. Like when you win a game like by 5 points and you dominate the foul line like that, that's obviously like huge hidden points.
Yeah, I was impressed in just the compliments that like that Cumberland, Scott, Jennifer all gave this team. I mean, Cumberland only had 2 points in the second half. He didn't even make a field goal in the second half. But I mean, you got 9 out of Keith. You got another 9 out of Jennifer. I mean, Scott, you mentioned earlier the huge three that he hit to ice the game. But with UCF crowding the three-point line and using their length to their advantage, I mean, Cumberland had nothing to do offensively in the second half, and UC still won that game. And if we're looking at this team's ability to make a stretch run, I mean, Scott, you kind of Matt, you kind of alluded to it earlier, you know, comparing this season to SK's season, where he had to do a lot of different things he had to carry this team on his shoulders because he didn't have a lot of weapons around him. I mean, Jaron Cumberland, in my opinion, is a more well-rounded player than SK ever was, and he has more weapons around him. And that performance last night from all players not named Jaron Cumberland really, really gives me a lot of optimism as we head into tournament season.
Yeah, the most interesting thing about yesterday's game to me was that for roughly 38 minutes, the Bearcats were just in mud on offense. And that has a lot to do with UCF and the problems inherent in playing Taco Fall. But towards the end of the game, they ripped off 3 really good offensive sets where they got great looks off great action. And it was like watching a completely different team. You know, and they do this occasionally. Like, but my internal question has always been, well, why can't that be the offense? Why can't you do that the entire game rather than wasting, you know, 25 seconds of every possession running motion for looks that are not efficient? You know, like, so much of the offense is, and the way that it looks is that they're trying to, you know, get post touches, and post touches are, for this team in particular, not an efficient way to score. Like, they are far better having somebody attack the rim from the three-point line rather than having somebody post up from 8 feet and try to, you know, get in the sky hook. You know, that's not an efficient look for this team because your post players are not efficient with the ball. And they don't pass, which is kind of a problem.
Yeah, to that point, it seems like the best like interior offense, and sometimes the only interior offense is what you can do off of cuts. Like Keith Williams is like the best cutter they've had in a while. So like, he always finds his way down low, and like with or without the ball. And of course, Cumberland can get to the basket, like especially in this league, he can get to the basket whenever he wants. And I think like the other balance is like Justin Jennifer like actually taking 2-point shots, even if he doesn't take a lot. Like, it's just because, like, him driving inside keeps the defense honest, at least. It's like, they really hug him on the perimeter. Like, not so much Central Florida, which I thought was kind of interesting, how they played Jennifer. They really, like, let off him a ton. Like, it's, like, as you mentioned, Chris, like, I'll get his name right. It was Terrell Austin was on Cumberland's jersey, like, the entire second half. Like, he had a really good game overall, I thought, too. But, like, if that's going to happen more and more down the stretch, and especially when you get into tournament time, it's going to be key for, like, this team just keep the ball moving and, like, get into, like, those sets where you can get the easier shots. It's not like it gets easier from here. Like, your competition is going to start getting, like, all good teams and no more, like, SMUs or, like, Memphis's.
Yeah, and the efficiency for this team is... I hate it when this is the case, but it's going to be the case for this group. How efficient this offense is almost entirely dependent on how they referee whoever is guarding Jaron. Because UCF fouled him on every play. Like, and not like little dinky stuff, like hitting him on the elbow. Like, full on slapping the hell out of his wrist, hitting him in the shoulder. Like, they fouled him on every play. And if the officials are going to allow that to happen, Jaron is going to struggle. Because even as big as he is, but if he can't get the ball because he's getting fouled every single time he gets anywhere near it, that's not a good look for the league. And, that's one of your best players. That is one of the marquee players in the conference, and you just let him get mauled on national television by a miniature bear.
Yeah, he only shot 4 free throws last night, and I mean, just looking through his stats, I mean, he shot 5 against Wichita State, 5 against Houston, 10 against SMU. Two against SMU, 10 against Memphis, 17 against Temple, 5 against Tulsa, 10 against. I mean, he's averaging almost like close to double digit free throws at any given night, just based on how many possessions he takes and how physical he plays. Last night was such a weird outlier where the refs were just letting them play, which is just really unusual for this conference, who uses refs that just basically seem to call any given foul if they just feel like it.
That was one of my biggest takeaways from the game too. That game was really, really physical, and it seemed like they could have cracked down on that one a lot. There was only 25 total fouls in that game, which made the game like flow like pretty nicely. But like the turnovers, especially in the first half, made that game feel really weird. But like overall, I was surprised with how much like people were getting away with. Like Cumberland was getting hacked, but then it was like every rebound, even in the Wichita State game, it was like every rebound is like a battle, and like the officials really let things slide. It's like how many rebounds last night were just like slapped back and like people were like fighting for the ball for like 4 seconds. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, freedom of movement.
Yeah, it sure as hell made it fun, though. I mean, I tweeted this out last night. Like, the first half was such a slog, but it didn't feel boring at all. It didn't feel like a few years ago when I think UC beat UCF, like, 49-38 or something like that. It was just such a bore. But, maybe it was just the amount of turnovers, or the fact that... UC was distributing the ball pretty well with Jaron at the point, I don't know. It was the game last night was fun as hell.
Especially the second half. Like, the first half was fun because UC, like, won it by 8 points. The second half, like, both teams, like, really making shots was a lot of fun because it was good seeing, like, and especially down the stretch when both teams were, like, really D'd up, like, with all their intensity. And, like, fortunately, UC was able to really, like, smother UCF down the stretch. That was a really fun game, and the crowd was really into it as well. It's like a nice home atmosphere when you only get two more home games, and I think that was a good one.
Yeah,
but those two home games are going to be crazy because it's Memphis coming to Fifth Third, where they actually like are kind of okay for the first time in a while, and then the decisive conference tilt with Houston. So what are you guys' odds that they run these four games at Connecticut, at SMU, Memphis, at UCF, and set up that conference taking showdown with Houston?
Scott?
We kind of talked about this a little last week. But I'd still put the odds. I think getting over that hurdle was pretty huge. But that return game at UCF is going to be really gigantic. Like, I'm not really worried about this UConn team, especially with how they've been playing now. Like, granted, UC on the road hasn't been amazing, but UConn has really just, kind of wilted with all their injuries. And they've just been getting kind of hammered lately. Last night, like, SMU routed them in Dallas. It's like, I think that one should be a win. And SMU is a really tough place to play. That's like, just coming out of that SMU game, I think is pretty huge. But I would probably pay. I hope that they go undefeated the rest of the way and make that Houston game for all the marbles. But I kind of wouldn't be surprised if they dropped one. Maybe like the UCF game. Just because that game is going to be incredibly crucial for UCF to win.
I'm so nervous about that return trip to UCF. Like, just based on how well UCF defended Cincinnati on the road last night and how well they responded, going into the half down eight and, really stormed out of the gates in the second half. I know we talked about this last week, Scott. I had a lot of confidence in them running the table following the Houston loss. That return game to Central Florida on a Thursday night, right, 3 days before the Houston game, has me really, really nervous.
Yeah, and this team has not been good on the road at all this year. Let's just call it what it is. In conference play, their two losses are both on the road, one inexplicably to ECU, one to Houston, which is respectable. But then you have a 5-point OT win over Tulsa, an 11-point win at Wichita State, which is the outlier of these, 4-point win at Temple, 5-point win at Memphis. I mean, like, they just play really close games on the road. And they tend to, no-show the first 10 minutes, which is a bit of a problem. But the good thing about that Central Florida game is you can play 30 minutes. There's not going to be a lot of scoring. So, first of 45 wins.
Yeah, that is kind of the advantage of this UCF games is that we know it's going to be tight. All you need is a couple of balls to bounce your way in that last segment, and you can probably steal a win there. Like, UC is not going to get blown out on the road at UCF. There's just not enough scoring on the other sideline to really make that happen. But that is kind of a little bit of an advantage of like playing this particular UCF team on the road.
And just like looking through like UCF's schedule too, like a lot of their higher scoring games have come at home, which is no surprise because like their role players play better at home too. And like just like that sequence for them to close the season, like they play SMU, then they go at South Florida, a very losable game, at Houston, like another like losable game, and like they already lost to Houston once. Then they host Cincinnati and go to Temple. Like not only is it their senior day, but like their tournament hopes are on the line. It's like they said in the graphic yesterday, they have zero quadrant one wins, and people are already saying like they're like barely in the tournament on some of these projections. If they whiff that, there's no way they make the tournament. Like they have to at least get one of those, unless they somehow like run the conference tournament, which like could happen, like, which I think is, I talked about it a little bit before, but this conference tournament's going to be so interesting. So I think you could see so many teams, like, run the table in Memphis. And UCF could be one of them, except their offense kind of, like, worries me a lot from, like, their odds of winning the tournament.
No, like, I don't think they have what it takes to win the tournament just because they just have B.J. Taylor. And, you know, well, and Dawkins has played a lot better in the last month or so, but he's been incredibly inconsistent all year long. Like, he's got a ton of talent, but the consistency is not there. Yeah, I'm just looking at Houston's closing schedule. They have a much easier road. Let's just put it that way. South Florida at ECU, Central Florida, SMU at UC. I mean, they at this point, yeah, they have to be heavy, heavy favorites to win the conference. It's just a much easier road.
Yeah, and there are only two road games, Cincinnati and East Carolina. Like, they avoid all the tricky teams on the road.
I don't know, man. That curse of the Mingy's Coliseum, that's going to get them. Please?
What is the tiebreaker, like, in this conference? Like, UC takes down Houston. They're head-to-head, I believe. Is it head-to-head? But they would be 1-1.
I don't know what the second one is.
Isn't there, like, 14 different steps to figure out, like, the actual...
Hold on. I'm going to Google.
I don't think we have an hour and a half, Matt.
Is it coin flip again? Do they get to do a coin
flip?
Oh,
for fuck's sake, no.
To decide who gets the number one seed?
I completely forgot about that. That is depressing.
Yeah, cause that was definitely in the American Conference. Wasn't it? Yeah, it had to have been.
It had to have been, yeah. Big East, they knew what they were doing. This conference is still trying to figure out as it goes.
So head-to-head's the first tiebreaker. The second one is you line up the top teams, they'll rank order the conference, and then you do the record of the two teams versus all the teams below them until one team has an advantage.
So that ECU loss is going to haunt us?
Possibly, yes. And if there is no tiebreaker after that, it goes down to winning percentage. Overall winning percentage, not conference, I don't think. It does say winning percentage. Overall winning percentage. But
if it went down the standings, UC would have the definite advantage because Temple lost or beat Houston. So Houston would be 1-1 against Temple, and UC would be 1-0 against Temple. Right,
I think that's right. If I'm reading this correctly,
but if Houston beats ECU, they would be what, 2-0 against ECU?
Well, yeah, but ECU is at the bottom of the standing, so that's
I thought you basically do it as an aggregate. I didn't know it's like you go line by line.
No, you take the next team below them, so the third place team, their two records against the third place team. If they're the same, then you go to the fourth place team. See what their records are. If they're the same, you go to the fifth, and on and on and on.
Okay. Well, then I'm good with that system. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, let's do that.
If it does come down to that, that is the most backdoor conference championship I've ever heard of.
Oh, it sure totally is, but, I mean, it plays the UC's favor, so I don't have any complaints about that. Like when you're cheating. Like, if you're cheating and it helps you, go for it. Yeah.
More so than winning the conference on a coin flip?
No, like, there's honor in a coin flip. It's just random.
It's the honor of the coin flip.
Yeah.
It's like the honor of the bullet. Haven't you heard that phrase? It's very much a dueling phrase.
Yeah, I have now. Like, we learned something new. Was there anything about the Wichita game that you guys wanted to talk about before we just move on to, like, the bigger league picture?
So, like, I bet that was a thing.
We kind of just glossed over that one. Because, like, Wichita shot, 28.6% in that game. And like Marcus McDuffie didn't really do anything, so it was kind of boring on their end.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to really talk up about Wichita State after just spent, you know, the last 30 minutes talking about last night's game. I mean, big picture, it seems like Wichita State's going to be fine. Like, they seem to turn it around pretty well. I mean, they're not winning every game, but they're playing a lot better, and they'll pretty much have everyone except McDuffie back next year, right? So, yeah, they should be back in the hunt next season, which is good for the conference.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was never any doubt that they'd be fine, but they're definitely going to be fine.
Yeah.
Their closing schedule, like, kind of ties into, like, the conference, like, tournament as a whole. Like, they played Memphis next. An interesting Memphis team, as Matt mentioned. Like, they played Tulane the other day, and, like, of course, they destroyed Tulane. Just like everybody does, because Tulane is really bad. Like, I think that's a pretty interesting Memphis team. At 16-11. Of course, that game is what next, or not for a while still. But if like they beat Wichita State, like on the road, I think that goes a long way to like making Memphis at least look more like a tournament team. If they didn't blow half the games they did, they would definitely be a tournament team.
I mean, the only thing they're going to make them a tournament team is if they win the conference on their home, or the conference tournament on their home floor, which. Not totally out of the realm of possibility. It's out there. I would say it's almost like as possible for Memphis to win the tournament as it is for UCF to get an auto bid, or sorry, to get a an at-large bid to the tournament.
Yeah, yes, I mean, no? the problem with Memphis is they've had two really, like, Thanksgiving weekend was a disaster for them, and so that's going to hold them against them. Like, losing to Oklahoma State is whatever, but then you lose to the College of Charleston, and then right after that you have Texas Tech. The Texas Tech loss isn't bad, but, like, they picked up a bunch of them in a row, and then they had another terrible stretch not too long ago. They had the loss to Tulsa, which is not great. South Florida, UC. I mean, like, they just have too many losses.
Well, I know. I mean, like, Memphis winning the conference tournament and getting the at-large. Or getting the, god damn it, yeah. Yeah, the at-large bid, yeah.
The auto bid?
Auto bid, yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever it's called.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's going to be a fun tournament as long as they're in it. Because there will be a crowd, and those are different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the only way people care about these conference tournament games are as if Memphis is in it. Because, like, nobody cared when UCF was in it. People did care when UConn was in it, when that was in Hartford. Like, we've seen through the Conference USA, Great Midwest, through all this history that, like, nobody in Memphis cares if, like, they're not in the tournament. It's like, UC will, like, travel decently, but nobody else will. So it's all on UC and Memphis to go the distance and meet the title game somehow. The only teams Memphis has lost to at home are Cincinnati and Tennessee.
Yeah, Memphis is like a completely different team at home than they are on the road, or I guess neutral too. I mean, like if Memphis ends up winning the conference tournament, I think they just outright knock UCF out of the tournament.
I think they would knock UCF and probably, it would depend on when they lost. Like if UCF made the finals and lost to Memphis, that'd be one thing. If like UCF or Temple goes out early, I think they're done.
Yeah. Yeah, one of those. Yeah, I think so. That's what's so interesting about this tournament is that, I mean, it looks like Houston and UC are pretty well locked in, like a 3 and a 7 seed, you know, give or take a seed. UCF and Temple are like right on the cusp now. Like, UCF was pretty solidly in until about 2 weeks ago, and now they are, like Temple's jumped them in some bracketology things.
Well, Temple has the best win of any team in this conference.
Yeah.
I feel very safe in saying that.
Yeah.
I think the crazy thing is, like, if you look at some of these, like, net ratings of the league teams, just specifically UCF, Temple, Memphis, and South Florida, the teams right under Cincinnati and Houston, they have a combined one, like, quadrant one win, and that was the Temple win over Houston. Like, Memphis, 0-7, USF is, like, 0-5, UCF was, what, like, 0-4, or whatever crazy low number it is, because they're backloaded schedule. Like, those teams really blown a ton of chances, but Temple got a gigantic win over the weekend when they went to South Florida and won in the most brutal way possible, where South Florida's fouled, like, with no time left. The guy missed one free throw long and just, like, missed one free throw short. Got a really brutal loss for them, and, like, a gigantic win for Temple, who's, like, number, what, like, 53 in the net rankings. So, like, they're hanging in there. Like, I don't think anybody in the league played this week, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's going to keep UCF out is they just didn't play anybody in the non-conference. Like, their most high-profile non-conference win is Alabama?
Maybe Northern Kentucky? I mean, just in terms of, like, quality of non-conference win?
But that's the
real debate.
That's kind of indicative of the problem. If you're pulling hairs over which is better, Alabama or Northern Kentucky, you didn't schedule well enough in the non-conference. Right. Now, if they flop out two of their bye games, one of which they lost, by the way, with, you know, a middle-of-the-road Big Ten team, you know, Illinois. If they flop Illinois for one of those, like, their profile looks much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if they don't lose to Florida Atlantic or Missouri, like, two teams who just haven't been good this season, like, at 21-4, they're probably a lot more of a lock than they are right now.
Yeah, they, at that point, you're talking about seeding, not are you going to get in.
Yeah, that's, like, the really weird place this league is, where, like, they have a bunch of, like, decent teams, but none of them can win on the road, except for, like, Tulane just can't win anywhere.
Tulane's unique in that they suck on the road and at home.
Yeah, they're adding, like, a flavor to the league. You can't just have a bunch of teams that go undefeated at home. You have to have somebody who, like, is like, hey, let's lose at home every once in a while. Come on, guys.
We'll be that pincushion.
If you take Tulane out of the league, like, which, like,
is that an option? Can we do that? Is that an option?
I don't think anybody wants to give up those easy wins. But if you took them out of the scenario, like, where they're 0-6 at home, the league has, like, won 72% of their home games, which is really insane. Like, they're already, like, 67%. Like, it's just crazy this league has been, like, just dominated by the home team.
Well, it speaks to, like, how much parity is in the conference this year. Like, we talked about it last week. Like, there's, like, 10 of the 12 teams in this conference are top 150 teams, according to KenPom. Like, there's this big, giant bucket in the middle that is full of, like, good, not great teams. And they all just beat each other up. And they can only really win at home. It's nice to see, but it's also like, yeah, this is why it's impossible to win on the road in this conference.
But, that being said, I will take this versus what the AAC has been for most of its history, which is
1,000%.
A top class and a bottom class and nothing in between.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
For years, the middle class was like a team. It's like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, Houston, they're not bad. They're not good, but they're not bad. That was Houston for the first 3 years of Kelvin Sampson's career. There, anyways.
Like, Memphis is a 76 in KenPom. UConn is 93rd. South Florida, fucking South Florida, is 103rd in KenPom. Like, those are three teams that are going through rebuild years and will probably be better next year. And we talked about this last week, Scott. Like, you get just Memphis and UConn going, this is like a five-bid conference every single year.
Yeah, it has that potential.
just the difference.
But
in the...
it's not even like asking that much of this conference, honestly. Go ahead, Scott.
I was about to say just the difference between like the league this year and last year, where UC, Houston, Wichita State, and none of them play to like the end of the season. Like it's been a lot more fun this year, and not just because like UC's been like team heart attack all year long either. Although that's certainly made game to game things a lot more interesting.
Yeah, and having this, you know, the way this league has played out this year has been really exciting just because, you know, there's no gimmies. There really isn't, other than Tulane, which we've spoken about at length. There's not a game where you can bail it and still win pretty comfortably, pretty convincingly. Like you gotta play every game. Like you just can't mail them in, and that has not been the case in previous years.
Even a team like East Carolina, just like to harp on that real quick, like their record in league is like 3-14. But they've been playing almost everybody really close. They've only lost, three games by double digits the last month. Which is, a lot for that program, which was really so down the last couple of years, where, it seemed like they just got, shit-canned by everybody. But now, they're hanging in on some of these games. Especially their home games. That's really been a tricky place to play for almost everybody.
Yeah, it's really interesting to looking at the makeup. It's just a shame that a lot of these teams are kind of building their tournament resume, so to speak. I mean, whatever it is, NIT, CBI, in conference. It's a shame that UConn picked up a Syracuse win in the non-conference. Tulsa got Kansas State when they were ranked. I mean, not a lot of pelts for the wall for this conference. November, December. You got to hope we get more of those going forward. I mean, that's really going to help this conference stand out, is by getting those really good marquee non-conference wins, way back early in the season.
Well, that's a lot of the teams in the conference are still in that mode of we need to schedule wins, not we need to schedule to prepare for March. We need to schedule wins. The only team that's not, the only team that consistently does not do that is UConn, and UConn should probably do that for a year or two just to get their feet back under them. Because they, this season was a lot for this particular group of players to bite off, and, they crashed and burned early in conference season, just like I think everybody expected them to do, just because it wasn't a smoking crater. But it was crater-ish with a little bit of mist. That's what Kevin did.
That's a good way of putting it.
It also did help that when Jalen Adams got injured either. Because, like as you mentioned, they were already so thin. But, losing, one of their best players, really just sunk them. They've lost, four in a row. And they got run out by SMU, as mentioned.
Yeah, you guys got anything else talk hoops, or we got 10 minutes left? Do you want to flip it over to football for a little bit?
Well, I got one more hoops thing.
All right.
Brian Gregory is the coach of the year, right?
Yes.
I think he is. I think he is, hands down.
Actually, I will caveat that. I will say if he gets South Florida 20 wins, he's a shoo-in. If not, you might have to give it to Samson.
They still play Houston and UCF. I don't think they have 17. They could get to 20. They have
you just need one in the conference, right?
Yeah, they have
in the tournament.
At Houston, home against UCF, at UConn, at Tulane, home against SMU. They could get to 20 and 10.
But he's done a hell of a job regardless.
And their defense, which was so trash the last every year, they went from 261 last year and kept on to 36. What an amazing turnaround by Brian Gregory. And really, what a terrible job that Orlando Artigua did.
Yeah, and if they get to 20 wins, I think it's the third 20-win season in school history.
Yeah, I mean, give it to them. Might as well.
It's like the biggest case against Samson would be, like, they were supposed to be really good. I'll guess they were picked to finish third. And if they only lost one game, he would probably win it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Houston overachieved based on preseason projections, but I think we all knew that the preseason projections were they were garbage because they had Central Florida winning the conference when Central Florida hasn't won anything. Ever.
Yeah.
That's still really...
A little dubious.
I still don't understand how they were the preseason favorite. Even, like, now that we're, like, way into February. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Weren't they a favorite by, like almost unanimous?
Well, yeah, of course they were. They have a really tall guy in one guard. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, that seemed to be what the voters were thinking. Oh, yeah, the guy, that tall guy and that one guy. That, yeah, sure. They'll win it.
I guess, by that thinking, you wouldn't be like, oh, they'll just, like, biff it 2 years in a row and just, like, completely, like, not play one side of the ball down the stretch. Like, last year, if you remember, they were, what, like, 17-9, and they lost out in the regular season. And, like, flamed out early in the conference tournament. That could kind of happen this year, which would be really unfortunate for them.
Yeah, UCF Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, like, if Central Florida's requirements to get to... This is going back to, like, the tournament discussion. If their requirements to get to the tournament are they have to go and win 3 games or 4 games in as many days, this team is not... They are not built for that. In so many ways. Like, you cannot play Taco more than 25 minutes. And if you don't play... If you just play him under that, you know, then you're a completely different team and you're not as good as, you know, what you were. Just because it changes the complexion of your team in a completely different way. Like, your defense, which was all about running people off the three-point line because you have this towering force in the middle. Well, you can still run people off the free throw line, but there's nobody to meet them at the rim.
Yeah, their defense has taken a gigantic step back this year, which is pretty interesting. Like, they're 49 on KenPom.
Yeah, it seemed like basically the gimmick in the middle is kind of caught up to them, and everyone's kind of figured out how to play around it.
That's everybody in the league. But then, like, their offense went from 281 to 61. It's like a gigantic leap.
Because BJ Taylor's playing. Didn't he miss, like, half of last season?
Yeah.
He did, and so did Dawkins.
In the league play, like, they've been actually good on offense. Which I think is, like, just, like, one last thing. It's, like, how, like, good people have been offensively. The only teams, like, below average are South Florida, Tulsa, East Carolina, and Tulane. Everybody else has, like, over 100 offensive efficiency. Of course, on the flip side, you only have three teams under, like, or four teams under 100 defensive efficiency. So, like, you take what you can get.
Yeah.
That is such an interesting thing this league has been for years, though. I prefer this version.
Yeah. And it's only going to get better next year. I mean, this is, like, we're talking about a rebuilding year, and you've got a ton of very, very good but not great teams. And, this is going to be a fun league going forward starting next season.
Yeah, and don't forget the number one player in the class is going to be in the conference.
Yep. And, did Hardaway get his dad to coach at Memphis to get him to sign, or...
No, that's what they did with the Lawsons.
Okay, that was it.
But, no, Penny was his high school coach.
Oh, okay, well, that helps.
It does. Relationships matter.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're Mick Cronin, and then someone comes in and swoops out, like, Kemba Walker out from under you. But I'm not bitter.
No, you don't sound it at all.
Mm-hmm. What did you want to hit on before we go, Chris?
Oh, I don't know. We got, 7 minutes? We could close it out, or we could talk a little football, just coaching staff, changes, that kind of stuff. Up to you guys.
Sure, let's hit it quick.
Okay. So, last month or so, UC's lost Joker Phillips to Maryland, the wide receiver coach. Steve Stripling retired, which is, like, super disappointing since, you know, he helped make Cortez Broughton into a force along the defensive line. They've added Chad Wilt from Army to replace Stripling. Just my thoughts initially, we haven't really, we're late February. We haven't heard about a Fickell contract extension. It's probably related to the fact that he's still kind of figuring out and finalizing his coaching staff. I'd like to see that kind of come forward, kind of, you know, build some solidarity going into spring, because, I mean, they're going to start practices here in about a month. I don't know, what are you guys' thoughts on that, on all that stuff going on?
Yeah, I was disappointed with Stripling retiring, but I think they got a good defensive line coach. And usually you don't go to Army for your position coaches, but Army had a phenomenal season last year, and the bellwether for that team was their defense. So anything that you can get off that staff, and they played like a really aggressive, interesting scheme. So I like bringing him in just to see what kind of ideas he can bring to the defense. And there's not a whole lot of room for, you know, changing the scheme, because Marcus Freeman is pretty well set with what he has, what he wants to do with this group. But, you know, folding in the ideas that he picked up in that year under Bateman at Army is going to be really interesting. And the defense probably won't be as good as it was last year, but it's still going to be very good.
I find it really, really interesting that Army just, like, had their whole, like, defensive coaching staff poached. Like I said, they did have a really great year last year, but it just seems really odd that Army is, like, the one who had, like, everybody on their defense league.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because you're coaching an Army and you've got a million restrictions on the kind of players you can recruit, and I mean, those, the service academy just have to basically out-scheme the rest of, like, their opponents in order to get wins, and it's tough.
Well, that and, like, they run, like, a ball control, like, we're gonna keep the ball for, like, 45 minutes offense. Like, their defense was really elite last year. Like, they were one of the best on, like, third downs and fourth downs and, like, points. But, like, I don't know. It just seems weird that you would, like, go to, like, an option team and, like, take all their defensive coaches. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
I think you are, because they took Army, historically not a bastion of great defense, unless you're talking about the 50s, in which case they were phenomenal. They turned that group into a top 30 unit. Which, I mean, Army hasn't been that good on defense ever. Well, not ever, but in a very long time. And, you know, look at it this way. When Navy is good, they are great because their offense is clicking. Army was great because their offense was okay and their defense was outstanding. So you usually don't get good defense from a service academy, and everybody knows it. So when one of these years happens where they just out of nowhere put together a really, really great unit, yeah, everybody's getting a promotion. Probably not at Army, but everybody's getting a promotion.
Well, do you have any thoughts about Fickell not getting any kind of extension yet, Chris?
I think he's still putting together the coaching. I mean, we don't even have a wide receivers coach with Joker Phillips gone. You know, he's probably still figuring that part out. I mean, I think they'll eventually get it done. The biggest key for me is the fact that, we just saw what Houston is about to is shelling out for Dana Holgorsen. $3 to $4 million for him, $4 to $5 for his assistant pool. You know, whatever raise Fickell gets, he's got to get another couple, like $1 million at least for that assistant pool. I mean, he's not going to pay, like, you know, like Brent Venables, it gets something, what, like $1.5 million per season as Clemson's defensive coordinator. I mean, he's not going to be able to pay that to his assistants, but he's got to be able to pay Marcus Freeman more than $275,000. UC's ability to maintain stability in this staff and therefore on the football field is dependent on Fickell being able to hire and retain quality assistants. And they've got to get that assistant pool up, especially with what the bar that Houston set a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and I do think that is forthcoming. You know, these things don't happen overnight, and I'm sure the discussions about, you know, contract extension, bigger salary pool for the assistants, all that were taking place in October when it was obvious that this team was really, really, really good and that they were going to have to do something to keep them in the fold. I don't know what promises were made, but I'm sure discussions were had and, you know, broad outlines of what he wanted to for his guys to keep them together were, you know, that discussion had to have taken place. It's just a matter of, and these extensions never come through right after the season, generally, unless you win a national championship, in which case you just get showered with money. So, like, by the summer, I'm sure it'll be all taken care of.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting that, like, nothing happened after he, like, turned down West Virginia. But he is making, what, like, $2.3 million a year? Maybe UC is just being, like, stingy and doesn't want to go, like, too high off of that.
Well, I think they're going to give him three. I think that they're probably going to, it's going to be right around three. And I think that the biggest negotiation point that Fickell is going to have with UC and Mike Bone is that assistant pool. So I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think they were like middle of the road in the conference. You know, not worst, not best, but with what Houston is shelling out for their assistants or giving Holgorsen to pay for his assistants, UC's got to not necessarily match that, but they got to get up there like second, third at least.
And I think they will. Like, they have shown a willingness and a desire to compete at the highest levels in the conference. Like, they're going to get there. Like, they paid Tubbs $3 million, and he wasn't worth a third of that.
And with, like, the, you know, the Florida schools are definitely going to spend as well.
Yeah, I don't know what South Florida's spending it on, though. It is not a happy situation there.
Yeah, they don't pay. Like, Texas is paying Charlie Strong more than South Florida is, and yet they're complete ass on the football field.
Yeah, a really, really weird situation where many people thought they would bounce back. That just, I don't know, that's just still so weird. Like, how did that
should have fired him.
They really probably should have.
Well, but why would you fire him? He started the year 7-0.
The anti-Chuck Martin.
Yeah. All right. I got to bounce, guys.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. And as always, go Bearcats.